Be part of the conversation. Send us a WhatsApp message on +27 73 470 3520 or call us at +27 12 001 7679. Let your voice be heard. Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media, from broadcast to baptism.
Cutting auto fuel costs. Now, economists have warned that despite the latest reprieve in the petrol price, the cost of diesel and petrol is likely to rise further during the rest of 2023. The Department of Mineral Resources and Energy said the price of 93-grade and 95-grade petrol would drop 24 cents and 17 cents per liter, respectively, from early this month, but that of diesel would rise by as much as 18 cents per liter. How much did you pay at the fuel pump the last time you filled up your tank? I did this afternoon as I was coming to the show, of course, and last week and the other week and the other day. And all, hey, petrol just goes by very quickly. That's a thing, hey? With fuel prices on the rise, perhaps you've decided it's time to cut fuel costs. How can you cut transportation costs? That's something that we are talking about today, and we are talking about it joined by Imen Nyirenda. Good evening.
Hello, how are you? And a good evening to the listeners.
I'm doing well. Thank you so much for asking. And how are you doing?
No, not too bad.
And your day, how was it?
Oh, the day is busy as usual, but what can I do?
Ah, it's life, eh? What else can we do? There's nothing we can do. We just have to make do with what we have. Thank you so much, Imen, for joining us this evening. We really appreciate your time. But before we get into this very, very, very important topic, because I think I'm also a casualty of it, you know, whenever I think about going to the fuel pumps and just to pour petrol, I get a little bit of anxiety. And I always need to remember that there's nothing I can do. You know, it's what we have to live with. But before you get into that, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Okay. In the context of this discussion this evening, I'm a petrol head, or what you'd call a gearhead if you are in the States. A petrol head, someone who's very interested in cars.
Yeah.
So I fix my own car. I like watching videos on cars. I attend car shows and things like that. And basically, if you say you know me and you don't know that I love cars, then you know you're not.
You don't know. You know what? I'm laughing because I thought I loved cars, but after you, I know definitely. I'm just a novice on this because I really, really love cars. And you know, the most interesting thing. Sorry to come in even as well. I'm just thinking about this one as you said. I was actually saying to myself, you know, between a house and a car, I'll go for the car. That's how much of a petrol head I am. But you seem to be more than just a petrol head. That's interesting. You are on another level.
A car follower, yes.
Exactly.
Yes.
Okay, that's interesting. So you fix cars as well?
Yes, no, I fix my own car. I would fix a friend's car, but I'm not a mechanic. So
yeah.
I'm not putting it out there for people to bring their cars to me.
Well, we're just trying a stream of income for you. You might just think about it, eh?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's interesting. Okay. And when did you realize this love for cars?
No, it's something that I've always had. Mm. And just as an interest, when I said to my dad after my trick that I'm going to do mechanical engineering, he said,
okay.
That's definitely you. but yeah, there's also this misconception that if you're studying mechanical engineering or you've done mechanical engineering, then you know you're a mechanic. That's all you do.
Mm.
Yeah, but there's so many different streams that you can go into under mechanical engineering as a discipline.
Mm. That's interesting. And which one did you choose?
okay, there's quite a number of things you can do under there, but I found myself, I've done some consulting, I've done facilities management.
Yeah.
Currently back in consulting again, or trying to find my feet in consulting again.
I see. That makes a whole lot of sense. Okay, that's interesting. Fuel price increases. Does this even bother you at times?
Oh, it always does. It always does, especially if you're one of those guys who loves, you know, the big cars and the big sounds. That comes with a price, you know.
Yeah.
You drive a small car, the silent ones are, you know, the ones that don't use fuel.
Yeah.
But if you want some noise when you put down your right foot, then you have to pay for that.
Yes, you have to pay for that. Okay, that's interesting. Yeah. I was talking to my colleague earlier on, and I think I was speaking to a person who runs a business, you know, where they fix cars, particularly the mechanics of it and all that. And he was telling me, this must be 2 years ago, he was telling me that the moment you get to 80 kilometers per hour, apparently the fuel consumption also increases as well. So I thought, okay, that's interesting. And I was like, I'm not one to drive at 80, eh? Yeah, so I don't know if I would fit on this one.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know many people who would stick to a speed limit of 80.
Exactly.
Except for truck drivers, and I have immense respect for them, you know, traveling the whole country or the whole continent driving at 80 kilometers an hour.
No.
So, there's quite a lot of discipline if you have the power under your right foot.
Indeed. You need enough discipline for that one. Okay. What causes price increases when it comes to petrol?
Okay, petrol prices are determined by the international crude oil price, which we don't determine. We just, you know, we're victims, so to speak. We can't control what happens there, driven by demand. And if you drive a car, there's nothing you can do about it. You know, it needs fuel. You can't decide that, no, today I'm not going to put in fuel, you know. Need the fuel for your car to work. So if the petrol price goes up because of the rand dollar exchange and the demand in crude oil prices, then that would be, you know, what determines whether next month we're getting a decrease or an increase in the petrol price.
Exchange rates and, you know, the crude price play a very, very important role. Why do they often go up and down? And particularly we've seen sustained increases over the last few years or so. What are some of the causes for that?
Causes would be the exchange rates.
Yeah.
If you would realize that every day when you watch the news, one of the financial indicators would be gold price, platinum price, your JSE indexes and all those things or indices, and then your crude oil price would also fall in there. So that is something that is determined by, you know, there's different grades of crude oil. And different places that produce it. If the demand or if the production is high, the price would come down a bit. If the production was low for that month, then the demand for it would also go up a bit. And then that would determine how much everyone else is willing to pay for that, which is, you know, supposedly scarce. And then it would determine what, you know, we end up paying for petrol and consumers.
So it's led by demand there and production and production as well. Direct question would be, do you always look at these things and follow them? Because I find that they are very depressing at times.
It's a good indicator of we know what where the petrol price will go for the next month. But we don't always get it right. I mean, if you read article, maybe you read from News 24, you go to CNN or you go to whoever supplies news in your part of the world, they would, you know, once a month or two times a month, they would tell you that this is the expected price for the next month. that could be a good indicator, but it could also change, and that they would always make available, or that they would tell you that, you know, this is an indication of where the petrol price could be next month, that we might be getting a cut of this much the next month. And if this rent stays the same, that will translate to the price in the next month. But if it fluctuates like it usually does, then, you know, sometimes they tell us it's going to drop by 50 cents and it only drops by 50 cents. Or if they tell us it's going to go up by a rand and the petrol price stays the same, or the rand-dollar exchange rate stays constant, then you might find that the 1 rand that they were anticipating is not as bad as,
Well, as lay people, and I think maybe you've had it in your corners as well, and maybe where you have such discussion, you know, there's this notion that, you know, we get very steep increases and very low decreases. So in other words, when the price goes up, it goes up very steeply, one rand something and all. But when it goes, comes down at like 20 cents, 13 cents, thereabouts. Is it controlled, or there's a conspiracy behind the control, or what causes that? Because I do think that as laymen, sometimes that's the argument would have to say, yeah, this government doesn't like us.
Well, I'm not the best person who's qualified to speak about that, but I would think that, you know, my frustration would be like that of everyone else.
Yeah.
Reading a few articles, I've come to understand that our petrol price is regulated.
Where
if a certain retailer wants to pass on certain savings to us, it's not an arbitrary decision that they make that, no, we're going to do this. That's why you'd find that if you go to Shell, you go to BP, you go to Engen, you go to whoever else sells petrol, the price is basically around the same price, because it's the government who controls what they should be charging us. I understand that at some stage, Pick and Pay was looking at going into the retailing of fuel. You know, they wanted to do something that would shake up the market, and you know, they were stopped. As something that, you know, the government controls. That no, you don't just, you know, determine that this is the price that you're going to pay and stuff like that, or that you're going to sell the fuel. Because there's certain levies that the government need to take off from the fuel, and those are for not only for the benefit of the retailer, but for the benefit of, you know, everyone. Road accident fund, for example, certain other levies that go into maintaining roads and all those things.
Sure. So maybe to an extent, then the argument that this government is validated, because clearly, there's certain
money. Perhaps that discussion should be had with all stakeholders. That, need to do something about the constantly increasing petrol price. But then on the other hand, we could also find that if we were to be compared to other countries, we're about some of the maybe. Blessed nations, because others would pay up to 40 rands a litre in Europe and places like that.
Which I mean, again, like you're saying, in comparison. But I think, you know, I suppose the challenge that we have is that we think in isolation, we think about it here and now and all that. And I think you raise a very important point that sometimes we need to look at it comparatively, you know, to say what are other people, what are other countries paying for the same crude oil that we are also, for the same petrol or diesel or whatever that we are paying in terms of fuel on our side. Now, let us get to this discussion now, which is what I really wanted to talk about. You know, there's big cars with big engines, and like you're saying, there's that sound, that vurpa and whatever sound that these cars make, which we really love. You know, I must be honest that I'm one of those as well. And then you find, like you said, your smaller nyana one, you know, and the other day I was referring to your skadonk that's sitting somewhere there, and all these sort of cars. obviously, I'm thinking, you'll correct me here, but I'm thinking ways in which one can save fuel and some extra coins or change or whatever differs depending on what type of car. Maybe can you help categorize these cars, and maybe in each of these, how can one save? Because I'm already thinking I probably fit in within the small skadonk ones. How do I save? Because even me as a skadonk with my small car, I'm still complaining.
Yes. Okay, so we, maybe the starting point with that would be that, you know, every engineering solution is a compromise of some sort.
Okay.
What I mean by that is, you know, if you wanted to save fuel, that you're going to pay for fuel for getting
well, it seems like we've lost you there for a little
to get
bit.
Somewhere quickly. Hello?
We've lost you there a little bit as you were starting.
Oh, okay. I was saying every engineering solution is a compromise of one sort
yes.
or another.
Yeah.
Yes. So if you wanted to get somewhere without spending much on fuel,
yeah.
a bicycle would do. you know, have your cereal in the morning or have your toast. And pedal to wherever you need to go, and you won't have to stop at any petrol station. But on the other hand, if you need to get somewhere quickly
yeah.
and in certain comfort, you know, start to increase as the power increases or as
yeah.
You know, comfort increase.
Yeah.
So in the case where you have a certain car and, you know, you need to get somewhere, it's either you change the car or you quit the car and try and change some certain behaviors. Okay. So certain behaviors would be your driving style.
Okay.
So we don't floor the car every time you see a gap in traffic, because, you know, if you have to stop somewhere, it means that all that energy that you wasted, you know, is going to get wasted in heat because you're trying to brake. When we talk about fuel economy, or you look at the car magazine, or you look at the window of your car and they say, this is the economy of this car, there'll always be an urban and an extra urban cycle. Urban cycle would be what you do in town.
Okay.
So your fuel economy in town is the worst that the car can have, because
yeah.
you're wasting a lot of time
yeah.
idling in traffic.
Yeah.
And then your extra urban would be what you do on the highway, open roads. That would be the best economy for your vehicle.
Mm.
Now, in having said that, we need to also establish that, you know, you need to plan your trips.
Mm. Mm.
The best or best route is not always the best route. So if there's going to be a lot of time where you're spending in traffic, sitting and idling, that should waste a lot of fuel.
Mm,
that's why
you'll
see that these days there are cars with stop starts.
Yes.
As soon as you put your foot on the brake and lift off the accelerator, your car stops, it shuts off the engine, and as
yeah.
soon as you take your foot off the brake and put it on the accelerator, then the engine starts, comes back to life.
Mm.
That's to try and save the fuel that you spend, you know, in idle traffic. And then the next thing is gearing. So we need to change between gears. I mean, the lowest gear has the most power, but it uses the most fuel. The quicker you can get to the highest gear, the better it is for your fuel economy. And then that means also, that does not mean that, you know, if I'm at a standstill at a robot, and, you know, I must take off from 0 to 60 in the shortest time possible and then move to the next gear like that. No, it means that, you know, be sensible in your gear changes and try and use as little revs or as little revs as possible so
yeah.
that you get to the highest gear that
yeah.
your car will respond accordingly. The next thing would be, if you drive a big car and, you know, it's a constant pain for you that, you know, I can't afford to be keeping this vehicle in the current fuel or economy.
Yeah.
Maybe downsize to a smaller car. That would save you a lot of fuel. You're seeing this a lot with manufacturers who are no longer using big 3 liter sixes, big 4 liter V8, big 5 liter V12. Most of these cars, when we were growing up, that if they say this is a 330 BMW, that is a 3 liter straight six.
Mm.
But these days, you find that a 330 could very well be 2 liter turbo. Because everyone is downsizing. You talk about the sound and all those things, and the latest AMG, just as an example, the latest C63 AMG is not a 6.3 liter V8 anymore.
Okay.
It used to be. Yeah, it's a 2 liter turbo with a hybrid. So everyone is trying to save fuel. It's not just consumers, it's manufacturers as well who are trying to save fuel and trying to save the environment, so to speak. So we have talked about the car that you drive, your downsize. If you can't, then you need to change the way you drive. And that means anticipating traffic, stopping and, constantly accelerating and braking, That wastes a lot of fuel. The more smoothly you drive, the more your car will reward you with good fuel economy. So if you see, the traffic is not moving so quickly, just try and hang back a bit, give yourself, space between you and the car in front so that you're not constantly touching your brakes and wasting that energy to braking, because as we understand when we were still in school that energy is neither created nor if you're accelerating one moment, you're taking fuel, burning it. If that fuel does not do the job in moving the car and you're turning it into braking, that is heat and that is a wasted energy. So you try and anticipate traffic, try and choose a route that is more flowing, and sometimes you find that in your alternative routes, one will have a toll gate, for example, and you're thinking, no, I'm not going to pay 20 rands for, to go and pass through a toll gate. Let me rather use the route that is congested and that is being used by everybody else. And you're busy standing in traffic. And in the meantime, you're saving, or you're running away from saving, from spending 20 rands, but you're spending more on fuel than what you would have spent if you had gone on the highway, for example, that you need to go to the toll gate or anything like that. So that would be, in a sense, be penny wise, but pound foolish. In planning your trip, try and make sure that there are as few stops as possible. That means that if there's a robot or many robots or many stops, you'd rather just take the highway because you're going to be maintaining a certain speed and your car will, respond accordingly in the use of fuel.
That's interesting. My first question, because I've got a couple of questions here, but my first question is there a particular speed that's more fuel efficient? 80, 90?
Come again?
Is there a particular speed that is more fuel efficient? Let's say you're driving on the highway. Because really, we see these cars that are flicking us out of the fast lane and all those sort of stuff. We
I think we have lost you there for a bit.
Can you hear me now?
I can hear you now, yes.
I was saying that, is there a particular speed, maybe let's say on the highway, right? Is there a particular speed that is more fuel efficient? Because we see these cars that are flicking us out of the, what they call the fast lane and all those sort of stuff. And maybe we look at them and like, yeah, Xala, you're burning fuel and all that. But maybe that's speaking out of being hurt that you've been flicked out of the fast lane, because you're trying to maintain a certain speed and also, keep your fuel consumption at a certain level. Is there a particular speed that's more fuel efficient?
Yes and no.
Okay.
I would say yes, explain it this way.
Yeah.
Your car does not like the constant speed changes, revs up, revs down, revs up, revs down. So you maintain a certain speed. If you're keeping to an 80 or you're keeping to 100, you're keeping to a 120, your car will respond as far as fuel economy is concerned. But then the no is in that you can't particularly say that at 60 your car is.
Yes.
Of course, your car, the lower the revs, the more the less fuel you'll use.
Mm.
Yes. But on the other hand, you know, you need to understand that the environment has to be also catered into.
Mm.
You can't keep 60 on the highway because, I mean, that is just, you know, frustrating. But you can't drive 120. You can't drive 120 in an urban area.
Yes.
So bear those two things in mind. That your car appreciates being, you know, left to do, you know, a certain speed.
Yeah.
Constantly keeping that speed will show in your fuel tank and your fuel use.
Ah, that makes a lot of sense. I must tell you that it is frustrating. You know, those drivers that just don't move. Like, you can do whatever you want to do. They just will not move. And you're like, how are you on the fast lane at 60 kilometers per hour, causing a lot of frustrations for everyone on the road? So, yeah, I do get that concept, and it makes sense. Talking about revs, you mentioned gearing there. Are automatic cars better at fuel efficiency? Because there I don't have to change. There's no revving. I just, you know, perhaps I suppose it's the braking that's going to be a little bit of a problem. But I find that people who drive automatic cars, hey, the acceleration, hey, I know, hey, they go, eh?
Okay, no, automatic cars. Okay, if I had, say, let's use an example of I'm not a BMW fan in any form or shape, okay?
Yeah.
If I had a 320D in automatic and a 320D in manual.
Yeah.
And I had a 320D, perhaps in another kind of transmission, let's say dual clutch.
Yeah.
What you would call a DSG or Vrpa.
Yeah.
Or you have a CVT, a constantly variable transmission.
Hey.
The simplest of those would be the manual.
Okay.
So in that being the simplest of those technologies for shifting gears, that would be the lightest car as far as weight is concerned in the transmission. So that being said, the manual would be, if we were to drive or to be given instructions that we all keep 2,000 revs for our trip, we keep 2,000 revs per minute as, you know, your engine speed.
Mm.
The manual would win because it is less complicated and is less heavy as a vehicle, as a unit.
Mm.
It's less heavier than everything else that is there in that class.
Mm.
On the other hand, you go to automatic and it's more complicated, so the gearbox will be a bit heavier. Weight is, hauling around weight is not free. If you have extra weight, you must pay for that.
Yes.
And the more complex your car is, the more you have to pay for that or for hauling around that weight. That's why 4x4s and things like that, you know, that mechanism for making it a 4x4 is heavier than a car that only drives 2 wheels.
Mm.
So it will be more heavy on fuel. The same thing goes for every other, you know, whatever it is. If you have leather seats, you have all these goodies in your car and all these other things that make your life comfortable and nice to you know,
you must
for
pay.
Your trip to be enjoyable, you have to pay for that. And that will be shown by your fuel use.
Yeah. Just when I thought that, you know, you could equalize this thing with an automatic car, you know, and it would keep to a certain.
That's why I was saying that, you know, your driving matters. Yes. Your driving matters a lot, but also your vehicle has certain things. If the more boxes you take as options, the heavier the car becomes, and the more fuel it will use.
Sure, that makes a lot of sense. Well, there you go, automatic people. You thought you were driving better cars. Well, On the, it's nice, you'll be comfortable, you have all these nice things that are looking at you and talking to you and all, but all those things, they add on to the weight of the car and you end up paying more, you know, when it comes to your fuel. Let's talk about braking there. I was very interested as well on the braking thing. Do I brake a little bit far? Do I, you know, what do I do with the braking? And, you know, related to that question, you know how we manual car drivers, you know, you get to a certain speed and then you put it back to neutral. You know, is that saving electricity or am I just damaging my car?
Okay. Braking is necessary. I mean, you can't escape. At some stage, you need to, you know, put slam on the brakes or slow down to merge with traffic or to, you know, avoid collisions and things like that. But the mechanism of, you know, how you brake, how you accelerate and all those things. If we were watching Formula One, I mean, those guys are taught how to maximize speed on a circuit. You know, you don't touch the brakes everywhere. You don't, you know, do certain things. You're trying to maintain balance of the car and trying to maintain speed at the same time.
Yeah.
You know, on the other hand, if you are someone who is trying to save fuel, there must be also a technique that you must use in order for you not to brake, you know, unnecessarily and try and waste energy that you've already burnt in your engine. And, you know, slow down and the fuel is already gone and you're slowing down. The fuel is gone. It's out the exhaust.
Yeah.
Anticipate traffic. If you see that, okay, there are cars that are slowed down or that are stopped at the stop there, you smoothly apply your brakes and, you know, hopefully by the time you get there, there could be some stroke of luck that cars are moving again. You don't have to come to a complete standstill so that you must pick up the same speed that you've just scrubbed off again and try and pick up speed again because that is fuel being used there. And, you know, maintaining a certain speed does not take as much energy as trying to get up to a certain speed. So with that in mind, you know, if you are driving and you need to slow down, understand that, you know, I need to get back up to speed if I'm going to slow down all the way up to. So if you're going to be coming at 100 and you see cars are stopped there and you're going to be testing your brakes as if you're testing a car for car magazine or something like that, you'll have to get up back to that speed and you'll have to use fuel again. So better to be smooth with your application of brakes. And if you see traffic is slowed down, just try and, you know, ease it down. And then at some stage, you know, try and pick up the smoothly again and all that stuff, you know, to reward you in the end.
That makes
sense. I think that's the reason why most insurance companies are trying to, you know, install certain monitors in your car to try and, you know, give you certain points for your good driving or good behavior on the road. Because if you're well behaved and you're that kind of person who is aware of your, you know, your surroundings and how you're driving and all those things, in the end, it means you're a better driver. And for them, it means they don't have to process certain claims that you're bumped into somebody or rear-ended somebody, you know, that kind of stuff.
We know that insurer, the other one that keeps on trying, telling us that they are discovering things. Well, we know that, they are very good at making sure that they penalize you for discovering things on your car.
Yes, exactly. They're trying to say is if you drive a certain way, you'll be happier and we'll be happier.
Well, that's what they keep telling us. Do I put my car in on neutral if I'm driving at a, you know, a manual car, get it to 100 and then put it on a neutral and let it drive on momentum?
Your gearbox is a very expensive piece of equipment. You know, to show you that your manufacturer is not intending for you to change your gearbox every now and then, they've hidden it so far, sometimes you don't even see where the gearbox is.
Yeah.
But things like brake pads and things like that are things that are easily accessible. Exactly. I mean, you can even see it standing next to the car that, oh, there are the brake pads or there's the brake disc and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So if it was up to me, And I was thinking about the longevity of the car. It's better for me to change brakes than for me to take in a car to be gearbox to be rebuilt.
Definitely.
And the prices are also the same. I mean, you can do brake pads in the front, maybe for less than 1,000, depending on what car you drive. You can do the same at the back for less than 1,000, depending on what car you drive. But I'm not sure that you can find any car out there where you can have a gearbox rebuilt for less than 1,000.
Yes.
So if that being the case, I'd rather you stay in whatever gear and you apply the brakes. And as soon as traffic picks up, you select the right gear and you are off on your way again.
So avoid putting it on neutral.
That means avoid coasting as well. If you're on a downhill and you feel, no, I'm going to save a little bit of fuel, and then you leave it in neutral and you're coasting down the hill, that is not wise. I feel your car already is not under load, so you're not using as much fuel as you would have been using if you're putting down your accelerator. The car will compensate for all those things. So it's really not. If we were to do an exercise like that, I don't think that you'd have any significant savings from, you know, coasting every time you see it downhill and then you put your car in neutral and coast down. Your car already will compensate for those things because you're being pulled down by gravity anyway.
Hey, I wonder this thing of election. We are told to just, you know, put it on neutral and then it will, save you a bit of petrol there and all that. Until we are all the while damaging our gearbox. And like you said, that thing is very, very expensive. It's not child's play at all. It's definitely, definitely very expensive. Okay, I've learned a thing or two, I must tell you. The braking, you know, the driving style and all those sort of stuff. Those things are very, very important. Listening to my car, changing gears, especially me, a manual driver, I listen to my car and change the gear, right? I need not change the gear unnecessarily.
Yes, that would be a very conscientious thing to do as a driver, and you know it goes also with experience. The more experience you gain, the more you will know that my car is not happy in this gear, or my car is happy in this gear, or whatever those kind of things. That is a way for your engine and your gearbox to try and be synchronized, so to speak, and that will translate to fuel savings and stuff like that.
I'm asking especially here for our ladies, without necessarily, because it's on gear one, and it's going all the way down there, change to two.
Yes, and pistons are bumping up and down, the engine is thinking, what is happening?
I've had such a guy, you'd have to even stop on the side of the road. Sissy, can I help you? Because, you are damaging this car because you've been on gear two for the longest of times. Like, really, you're damaging your car, you're using a lot of petrol and all those sort of stuff. So I think that's really important. And hence, I thought, let me bring that question as well because, we do find a lot of ladies.
Let me step in there and just maybe say something. Your engine, is meant to move the car, but the thing that should work harder than your engine should be your gearbox.
Okay.
So don't labor the engine, your gearbox is supposed to take that work or that strain from your car. That's why you have different gears for different scenarios. It's to try and take the strain away from your engine and put it to something else. Because what we're trying to do is take the drive from the engine and put it on the wheels. And that link between the wheels and your engine is the gearbox.
So that's very important. Ooh, okay, that's certainly very, very important. Any final words to our listeners there on how to save fuel and maybe a little bit of better driving as we close it on this one? It's a very important topic.
Perhaps the elephant in the room is this issue of octane. I mean, 93 is cheaper than 95. It would seem to someone who's budget-wise that, let me go for 93 because it's cheaper and I can get more for 100 rands than I can get for 100 rands if I was buying 95.
Yeah.
But actually, your manufacturer tunes your car or builds your car based on a certain fuel.
Oh my goodness!
So if your car says 95, you putting in 93 might seem like a saving now. Actually, you're causing damage to your engine because it has to work harder to try and extract certain performance from that fuel.
Don't say that.
Let me explain one thing about the octane number.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that, you know, 93 has less power than 95 or 98 or jet fuel or whatever. All of them are petrol.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
At the end of the day, your engine has certain performance that it needs from a fuel.
Yeah.
And the higher that number, the more the fuel resists being detonated into sparking itself into a fire before the process has completed itself under a situation.
Yeah.
So if I was buying 93 and my car was calling for 95, it means that my car must now, you know, try and limit how much power it gets from 93 so that it doesn't, you know, destroy itself while trying to extract the performance from that fuel.
Yeah.
So,
sure.
Yeah, then we don't mix the two. If your car says 93, use 93. If you feel like you're Cortani and you want to spoil your car, 95 is not the way to do it.
Yes.
Wash your car, get paint, wash and whatever, all those things that try and shine your car.
Yeah.
That's number one. But on the other hand, if you're trying to save fuel and your car costs for 95, 93 is not the way to do it. Yes, change your drive style and do all those things. So that means we must check our tire pressures.
Yeah.
There's tire pressures that are printed either on the door of the driver when you open there on that jam.
Yeah.
You'll find the tire pressures there on the fuel release door there. You keep those as per your manufacturer's recommendations.
Yeah.
It will say if there's one passenger in the car, one driver, the driver only.
Yeah.
This is what the pressure should be. If there's two passengers, this is what the pressure should be. If it's fully laden, this is what the pressure should be.
Yeah.
That is to help you to maintain either control of the vehicle and also to extract as much from the fuel as you can. A flat tire, is you're dragging around a tire that has no air, and that air is what is carrying your car.
Mm.
So if it's not as much as it should be, it means that your car must work harder to try and maintain a certain pickup speed.
I see. Yeah. Makes sense.
The next thing would be to keep your car clean.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
I mean, you could look at, you know, car racing, and you'd see that every now and then a car comes into the pit stop, and, you know, you think, these guys, why are they wiping their car? Is it to shine the sponsors so that sponsors are seen clearly? No, it's that dirt that is on your car is messing up with the aerodynamics of the car. Your car was designed with a certain smooth surface so that air can pass over smoothly. So if mud and all these things, they're causing drag, which is also going to cost you more to pull around. So the other thing would be to keep your car serviced.
Yeah.
One of the best ways to see that, you know, you're getting as much from your fuel as you should. When you fill up your tank to a certain level, just make it a habit to reset the trip computer, and then you'd know that, okay, if I put in 100 rands of worth of fuel, for example, I get 100 kilometers of distance or range.
Yeah.
You do that over a few months, you start to realize, oh, okay, my car behaves this way.
Yeah.
If you get to a stage where 100 rands of fuel, if the petrol price was constant and you saw that you are now getting 50 liters or 100 rands give you 50 kilometers, now you know that there's something wrong with your engine.
Yes.
That's a nice early warning system. On the other hand, it also helps you to keep track of, you know, your spend on fuel and all those things so that you can know that if I filled up on Shell 100 rands, I get so many kilos.
Mm.
If I get 100 rands of Caltex fuel, I get so many kilos, which is called Astron by now, is going to be rebranded.
Yeah.
BP gives me this much. And you'd also know that, you know, my car is happiest with fuel from this garage. And that is something nice to know. I mean,
sure.
If your car performs the best with fuel from this garage, then why go to any other garage?
Yeah.
Yes.
Sure.
Yeah.
Look, I do think this is part one. You're not done, my good sir. We'd
no.
certainly like to have a part two with you and lash this out a little bit more. We've just run out of time. That's the enemy, of course, which is time. But really appreciate your time. Let's have part two very soon.
That would be most welcome.
There's a comment, in fact, here that says, conclusion of the conversation, buy a bicycle. And then keep my car clean. Definitely time to invest in a bike. So there you go. That's what I'm saying. There's still part two of this conversation that we are going to, because you are literally dropping gems there right towards the end of the time that's allocated for us. So I'd really like to bring you for part two, if that's fine with you.
No, that would be fine with me.
Definitely. Thank you so much, sir. Have a good one.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Of course, so we're talking about cutting costs when it comes to electricity. Yay. This one is going on podcast.
You are tuned into Business Sense on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.